Welcome back to hour number four. Only got an hour left. It seems like it went by so fast. This is the Grant Napier Show with me, DC, Doug Christie. We've had Coach Yeager on. We've had Jerry on, Jerry Reynolds, Greg Papa for a second. This has just been actually, Grant, one of my favorite shows.
You're into it?
Yeah, I am. We started out with analytics, which was an absolute fantastic conversation. And then we got a whole bunch of Jerryisms in the middle of that, and we get Coach on. So it's been good stuff, man. And as we start to wind this down, meaning the week, we got a game tomorrow, Memphis.
No, Saturday.
Excuse me. Game Saturday, Memphis. Tomorrow we have another full show, 4 hours, so we are going to have a bunch of fun, man.
Oh, yeah, we're looking forward to it. If you want to get in a little bit later in the hour after we talk with John Schumann, you can do so at 339-1140 and 800-920-1140. Some key NBA games going on tonight. I think the game in the East, you know, we keep on waiting to see who's going to be that second team in the Eastern Conference to emerge. Will it be Boston? You know, right now it's Toronto. But again, you know, is there a team in the East that can play with the Cleveland Cavaliers? And, you know, Toronto looks good now, but I don't think anybody's going to pick them to be able to win a series against Cleveland. I just don't see it happening, barring injury. They're pretty much as close to a lock as you can be without being a lock. But that's just my opinion. All right, let's get to, as mentioned, John Schumann, NBA TV and NBA.com. John, it's Grant Napier and Doug Christie. How are you?
I'm great, guys. How are you guys doing?
We are doing good. We appreciate you taking the time. I was just talking about, you know, the Eastern Conference. And listen, I have a lot of respect for Toronto, and they're two back in a loss column. But you know, there's that but, dot, dot, dot. Do you see, as we get through the months of January, February, March, and April, and into the spring, that second team really emerging in the East? Is that team Toronto, or could you see it be Boston? And regardless of who it is, do you see them really having a legitimate chance to win a series against Cleveland?
I think Boston has a chance to become the second-best team and has a good chance to, say, you know, be the team in the Eastern Conference Finals. But no, at this point, you know, as long as the Cavs are healthy, they're the best team in the East by far. I think there are some questions with them. They're playing a really short rotation. You know, this is a team, you know, we thought that would be on cruise control right through the regular season. But these, you know, Ty Lue has consistently played a 9-man rotation. And, he didn't have DeAndre Liggins in the rotation at all. Then J.R. Smith gets hurt and DeAndre Liggins comes in the rotation, and then J.R. Smith comes back for a little bit, and in order to keep DeAndre Liggins in the rotation, they bump Mike Dunleavy. So it's like he's almost like, you know, they haven't given, you know, the rookie point guard Kay Felder much of a chance to play. They've been playing without a backup point guard basically. So it's interesting just to watch them play with such a short rotation this year in a year where you thought they'd sort of be on cruise control and just sort of pacing themselves. So, but I think their schedule is going to get a little bit tougher in the second half.
John, what do you think about the Boston Celtics being able to maybe overtake that second spot that Toronto has? You know, Brad Stevens has a really good group. They've been dinged up. Al Horford coming over as a free agent signing by Isaiah, playing all-star basketball, and then Avery Bradley as a lockdown defender. I like the style of basketball they play. Do you think they can move up and maybe take that next step?
Yeah, I do. I really like the way they play offensively. Like, they're a stark contrast from Toronto in the way, you know, Toronto's got the best offense in the league, but they just play in a very, you know, ISO heavy, low assist, mid-range game. You know, DeRozan gets to the free throw line a lot. Boston is the complete opposite. They just really move the ball, early offense, trying to move the ball and find the open man. You would think that that's more sustainable in the playoffs, where a defense can't just sort of load up on one or two guys like defenses have against Toronto in the playoffs in the past. I think Boston's just got I think they've been a little bit of a disappointment defensively. Right now they're sort of in the middle of the pack defensively, where last year they were a top five defensive team. So I think if we can start to see some more improvement on that end of the floor, then yeah, I think they have the potential to be the better team. Just because they could be the better defensive team and maybe a little bit more sustainable offense with the way they move the ball.
John Schumann, NBA TV and NBA.com. John, I was in Portland last night, and so, you know, I was there with Terry Stotts and heard his comments as it relates to George Karl and his comments about Damian Lillard, and we've seen excerpts from the book, and we were all in the media room in Portland last night, Kevin Calabro, myself, Jerry Reynolds, and, you know, we were talking about this, and I got to tell you, we're all bewildered by, you know, what we're reading, and I'm just curious your thoughts and your colleagues at NBA TV and NBA.com. Because, yeah, we know George has got a big ego, but it just seems to me that George is going to be coming out of this looking real bad. Give me your thoughts on this.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I don't understand it at all. You know, I don't understand what, you know, I think he's just voicing his opinion. I think he's a little, if you just hear his comments, I think he's a little taken aback by all the sort of the criticism that he's getting for, wow, for what he is. So I don't think he understands quite exactly what he's doing as far as burning all these bridges with you know, people the last, you know, 30 years. So I find it a little bit confusing too. And I think, you know, I doubt there's any chance he's going to be a coach in this league again. And I don't I don't know if he's got a chance to even work in broadcasting at this point. So,
Do you think he's tarnished his ability to get into the Hall of Fame now?
I don't know about that. That's a question that's well beyond, you know, my purview, but I think, you know, yeah, I find it, you know, hard. I don't know if anybody wants to touch him at this point. And the Hall of Fame is just a totally different question.
Looking at the Clippers in the Western Conference, right now they're fourth. No Chris Paul, no Blake Griffin. How far do you think they could free fall? You got a Thunder team who, you know, Westbrook's going to keep them around, a Jazz team that's trending up and getting healthy. Do you think that they continue to fall? And if so, where do they bottom out?
You know what? I think it depends on the health of Chris Paul. Like, I think they can survive without Blake Griffin. They did it last year for an extended period of time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Paul had the hamstring injury. He came back and played last night. Didn't look 100%. You know, I think it's just a matter of how quickly he gets back to full health. And if he is, I think they can stay in the four spot. Oklahoma City's got a tough January where they play most of January on the road. So I think... And Utah is getting healthy. That's a very, very good team, and they could potentially move up to a four spot. But I don't think the Clippers are going to fall that far. I think they have, as long as Chris Paul is healthy, I think they have the ability to sort of hang around the four and the five spot. I'm curious to see, again, how they play like they did last year, which is a little bit more floor spacing than they have when they have Griffin and Jordan out there together. I think, you know, you put an additional shooter, three-point shooter around, you know, Chris Paul, DeAndre Jordan, pick and rolls, you still have the potential to have a very potent offense, even though you're, you know, obviously out without your second-best player for an extended period of time.
I'll tell you what I'm hoping for. Just give me Houston Golden State in a playoff series, okay?
Oh, boy.
They may have to replace the bulbs on the scoreboard. That's the series I want to see. Can you imagine how much fun that would be?
There's a potential for a lot of fun matchups in the West. Just, you know, Golden State, Houston, the Clippers, Oklahoma City, and the Spurs. I mean, that's a lot. And Utah, I think, is just a lot more fun to watch this
Absolutely.
Year than they have been in the past. They're not playing. They're still playing pretty slow, but they just have a little bit more offensive weapons with the guys that they added. George Hill is an obvious huge upgrade at point guard as long as he gets healthy and stays healthy.
Yeah, I think he's playing tonight. He's coming back after missing 13 games. I got to tell you, when I see what the impact of Rudy Gobert is on that team,
Ooh.
And I look at the other things and George Hill, I really believe this could be a 50-win team. Am I overboard a little bit?
No, not at all. I mean, Gobert is a fantastic defender, and I think he's much improved offensively this year. He's finishing a lot better. You know, recently I just looked at sort of the most improved shooters in the league, and he's right up there as far as field goal percentage, even effective field goal percentage. When you take threes into account, he's still one of the most improved shooters in the league. That means he's just finishing, and he doesn't shoot. You know, he just catches and finishes, and he's just doing that a lot better than he has in the past. He's becoming a much more complete big man, you know. And on offense, with a guy like screens, roll to the basket, catch and finish, and if he can do that, he's a plus offensively. And then this is a team that right now ranks in the top 10 on both ends of the floor, which is, you know, where you want to be if you can contend to.
with John Schumann, NBA TV, NBA.com. We mentioned the Rockets. How much of a surprise is what D'Antoni is doing there with Harden to you and everybody kind of around that NBA community?
You know what? I don't see Harden's like assist numbers as that much of a surprise. I've always thought of him as a really, really good passer, as a really good pick and roll passer. You know, like he's sort of in LeBron mode where he can take a pick and roll, drive one side of the floor, and then find a corner three on the other side of the floor. You know, make that cross court pass when he bends the defense and that weak side guy comes in and helps a little bit. So I've always thought he's a great passer. He just now has an extra weapon out on the floor when you bring in Ryan Anderson to play the four instead of the guys they've had at the four in the past, you know, and that just makes him just that more dangerous. You know, when you have a really good role man and maybe a more willing role man in Clint Capela than Dwight Howard was, obviously Capella's out, but, you know, when they have him starting and Anderson at the four and Trevor Ariza, you know, who's the guy who's led the league in corner threes each of the last three seasons. And then either Eric Gordon or Patrick Beverley at the two. I mean, you run a pick and roll with James Harden. I mean, it's a pick your poison situation for the defense. You know, you got to either help on him and cut him off or leave an open shooter or, you know, let him get to the basket and get to the free throw line in order to stay at home. So I think the addition of Anderson just made them extremely potent. And it's not just Anderson himself, it's just the space that he creates.
John, on Sunday we saw a great game in Cleveland, but we also saw the after effects from practice with Kevin Durant talking about how he feels the NBA's last two-minute report and their transparency is throwing the officials under the bus. And then yesterday the officials union came out and basically agreed. And we know that Adam Silver is all about transparency with the officials. Do you expect any type of change in this regard?
That's a great question. I would love to hear Adam Silver's thoughts on it right now. You know, I understand what the league's trying to do. You know, they don't want the situation where, you know, there's an obviously missed call and then the league just sort of, they don't want people to think that the league is just sort of sweeping a missed call under the rug and not acknowledging it. So I understand why they do the last 2 minute reports, and it's just, and I understand why they can't do it for all 48 minutes. Cause the reports as they are take a long time from what people have told me. You know, they even just doing the games that are within five in the last 2 minutes and doing the last 2 minutes of those games, that takes a long time to go over every call, get the proper approvals and everything, and then come out with the report. So there's no, you know, extending it and saying, oh, let's just do it for the full game. So that's not going to happen. But yeah, I think, you know, you have to think of the pluses and the minuses of it. The pluses of it, it's transparency. The minuses is that, you know, it doesn't, you know, it just may make more people angry than happy just to see the report that, you know, such and such call was missed. So, I think I'm sure they will continue to look at it and decide what to do and talk with the refs and talk with the players and decide what's the best process going forward.
Here in Sacramento Kings land right now, Kings in the eighth spot tied with the Nuggets at 14 and 18. You got the Nuggets, the Trailblazers, Pelicans, the Lakers are in there. And then if you want to go down to the Timberwolves from the outside looking in, out of those teams, who do you think boats the well maybe to hold on to that eighth spot?
That's a great question. It's, you know what, it I think it's wide open. It's anybody's game. You know, I think Portland's an obvious disappointment with how poorly they've defended. You know, they're just leaking holes all over the place defensively. The Kings can do it. I mean, they obviously have the talent. It's just a matter of cohesion and getting things done defensively, improving on that end of the floor a little bit. Denver has sort of found something a little bit with a new starting lineup, giving Nikola Jokic a little bit more playing time. And so they have the potential. And I wouldn't count out Minnesota at this point. You know, they just have so much talent and they're a very good offensive team. And you got to figure that Tom Thibodeau is going to get them to defend a little bit better as the season goes on. And they're a team that's been sort of snake bitten by some poor late game execution. You know, I think if you look at their point differential, they're a better team than what their record says they are. And so I think it's wide open at this point, and it's just going to be a matter of which team comes together and improves defensively. All those teams need to improve on the defensive end of the floor, and it's which team can sort of defend the best over the next couple months that's going to have the advantage.
You know, I agree with you about Minnesota, but here's my question. You know, I watch them play, and I watch how poorly their point guards are in shooting the basketball, and Ricky Rubio and Chris Dunn, really. And again, he's been very disappointing. And, yeah, he's a rookie, and that's not uncommon at that position. But I would just wonder if they can shoot the ball well enough from the point guard position.
It's a great point. And Rubio has been such a difference maker for them over the last few years. If you look at their numbers when he's on the floor versus off the floor, they've been such a much better team with him on the floor. Even both offensively and defensively than with him off the floor in previous years. But I think this year they're running the offense through Wiggins more. They're running the offense through Towns in the post and Wiggins on pick and rolls that Rubio's playing off the ball more. And then that's why his shooting has hurt them more this year than it has in the past. And you're right. I watched their game. I don't know if it was last night or the night before it was against Denver, and Towns was being guarded by Wilson Chandler, so he had a size advantage. So Denver would throw double teams at him, and Rubio was inevitably the guy open, and he just missed. You know, he missed so many outside shots that it was just, you know, killing their offense. And so I agree with you. I think, you know, now that Wiggins is got the ball in his hands more, and Towns is got the ball in his hands more, they need a better shooter from the point guard position than they've needed in the past. So they need more of there's point guards out there that are better shooters than playmakers, and maybe that's a better complement for the guys that they have.
Yeah, I mean, because I wonder with the – Doug and I talk about this every day. You know, with the way the game is played now, can you win in the NBA if your point guards don't shoot the ball well? And I don't think you can.
Well, if he's the primary ball handler, like if you look at Milwaukee and Antetokounmpo, I mean, he can't shoot, but he's the primary ball handler. And so if he's not needed to face the floor, then, yeah, I think you can win that. If you have a point guard that's attacking, and Rubio's a very good playmaker and a very good defender, you know.
Yeah, he is.
Talk about
no question.
Defense enough.
Yes, he is.
But the problem is if you take the ball out of his hands now and put the ball in Wiggins' hands more and put the ball in Towns' hands more, then you need a better shooter. If Rubio is the one running all those pick and rolls and then picking and making the plays and finding shooters or finding the roll man, then I don't think he can be a good offensive point guard. But if like I said, if the ball's in the other guy's hands, and then he becomes a liability.
Looking at first, we're talking to John Schumann, NBA TV, NBA.com. Looking at the Warriors, you see a prolific scoring team, but interestingly enough, when they played the Cavs on Christmas, you look at LeBron and his ability to control the tempo and the pace of the game. A team in San Antonio, again, flying under the radar. Do you give them a fair chance to beat the Warriors based upon the fact of being so well coached and maybe being able to control pace and tempo?
I think Golden State has got the clear advantage versus any Western Conference opponent. But I think the lesson from the Christmas game is the same lesson from the finals, in that you can be the best team over 82 games. You can be the best team over the first four games of a series. You can be the best team over the first 40 minutes of any particular game. But closing is a skill, and mm-hmm. The Cavs have that skill. You know, they have that skill over the Warriors at this point. You know, they have the ability to know that, you know, if they're in the picture, they can beat this team down the stretch. Kyrie Irving is a closer. You know, LeBron is a closer at this point in his career. And there's a little bit, no matter what happens from between now and June 1st, you know, when the finals come and the Warriors see those guys across the floor, I think that, you know, there's a mental edge now that Cleveland has, and I'm curious to watch them. Fortunately, these guys play again in the next couple of weeks, so yeah. I'm looking forward to that matchup in Oakland.
Great stuff, John. We really appreciate you coming on. Happy New Year.
Anytime, guys. Happy holidays.
Hey, you too. Yeah. All right, good stuff right there. Couple games going on. Memphis is leading the Thunder at the break, 55-39. Bad first half for Isaiah Thomas. He only had 19 points, 4 assists, and 3 rebounds, and the Cavs are leading the Celts by 6 points.
Can we get him back?
How about that, huh?
Can we get you back, man? Oh, man. I don't even know what to say. Love him, and I love watching his success, Grant, because he is one heck of a hard worker, man. He gets after it in the gym. And, yeah, great stuff by John Schumann, man. Talk about closing, Grant. You know, it is big time because we've talked about this winning streak with the Kings that's now over. There was 32-20, 33-21, 32-22. In every game, they were absolutely closing the door at the end. You don't have to go home. You just can't stay here, Grant. That's what they say about closing.
All right. If you want to call the program, you can at 339-1140, 800-920-1140. Again, Memphis is leading 55-39. Memphis will be here on Saturday. The Grizzlies at 20-14 on the year, and the rematch coming up Saturday. And then the Kings will start the new year Tuesday in Denver at the Mile High City. NFL. We haven't really talked a lot of NFL today, but let's do it because of the schedule. We had Greg Papa on, so we did spend the first hour talking about what we expect this weekend. Of course, the big game is the last game. All right, it's Green Bay at Detroit, Sunday Night Football. Woo. The winner is the divisional champ and the number four seed,
right?
In all likelihood.
Yep.
The loser, in all likelihood, is done for the year. Okay, unless the Giants beat the Redskins, and I don't see that happening.
But now we know that the Giants are going to play their players, so there's a...
So he says.
There's a bigger probability now than we initially thought. So Sunday Night Football, Detroit, Green Bay, Stafford throwing just darts, Rodgers throwing everything. It's going to be an absolute dandy.
All right, those are the big games. Oakland at Denver, obviously a huge game. New England at Miami, they've got to lock down the number one seed. Kansas City at San Diego, Kansas City needs to win in hopes that Oakland loses to become the number two seed. A lot of interesting matchups. One of them has Seattle at San Francisco, which will probably have all Seattle fans at the game on Sunday, I would think.
That's right.
No, man. I'm seriously. Seahawks will have that play. I mean, there'll be a lot of empty seats, but if you go out and count the number of fans, you'll have more Seattle fans in there than Niner fans.
Want to go to the game?
No, I'm watching a Giants-Skins game. I'm not going to the game. What's wrong with you?
Thought I'd ask, man.
No, I'm not going to the game.
I'm not going. I'm watching it at home, too.
All right. We'll be right back. Sports 1140 KHDK. 339-1140 and 800-920-1140. Iman, what's going on? Happy New Year, buddy.
Hey, Happy New Year, guys.
How are you?
Good, good. It's an honor also to speak to Doug Christie again.
Thank you, sir.
I just want to ask one question, well, a couple questions. The first question is, how worried are you guys for DeMarcus at some point to want to ask for a trade because of the fact that he has to shoulder almost all of the offense, it seems? I mean, you know, he's shooting threes. You know, a lot of the perimeter guys aren't, you know, really making their shots. You know, yeah, they won four games in a row, and when they do win, they have relatively balanced scoring. But, like, last night, nobody else was making any shots. You know, Matt Barnes isn't really contributing much. You know, that's my first question. My second question is why they didn't get Ryan Anderson in the offseason. But I want to just start with the first question. Like, you know, out of 1 to 10, how worried are you guys that, you know, he's going to ask for a trade? Despite any of the rumors.
I'm not worried about it at all because, first of all, he has said nothing to even intimate that he says he loves Sacramento, says he wants to stay in Sacramento, and every time he's asked about it, he says he loves Sacramento and would love to play his entire career here. And the other part of it, if I want to go and say, for sake of conversation on the radio, if that happens, I've said this before and I'm going to say it again, the Kings aren't winning with him. So, like, would it be the end of the world if he went to Kings management at some point this season or the next season and said, you know what, I'd really like a fresh start somewhere else? I mean, so what? It's not like you're winning 50 games every year.
I mean, so I have a blog for Persian Media Daniel called Persian Observer. So we wrote a blog about, you know, how if you look at the win-loss percentage, you're right. I mean, they're not, like, in the playoffs per se last few years, but I personally think they'd end up being like the Sixers, or, you know, they could beat the whatever below the doormat of the NBA is.
Well, my opinion is it's better to be the Sixers than it be a team that's winning in the low 30s to mid 30s every year. I personally would rather be the Sixers because you have a chance to get a Joel Embiid. You have a chance to get a Ben Simmons. You know, if you're winning 35 games every year, you're not getting any studs in the draft unless you get lucky. And by lucky, I mean the Spurs getting a Kawhi Leonard or something like that. I mean, Iman, the worst place you can be in the NBA in terms of wins is in the mid 30s. That's the worst. That's like no man's land.
In the second part, Iman, the second part of your question, I believe, and Grant can speak to this, I believe that the Kings tried to get Ryan Anderson. He just ended
Oh, they
up,
did try to get him. They yeah. actually gave him more, offered him a tremendous amount of money. I heard it was even more money than Houston, but it was on par with Houston, and he decided to go to Houston.
That's disappointing. I didn't realize that. How realistic would it be for the Kings to get John Wall? Because I've been hearing these trade rumors. You know, I don't know the reality of that, but is that something that could happen? And if that would happen, would that be a positive addition?
How are the Kings going to get John Wall?
I was going to ask Iman. Iman,
how are they going to get John Wall? How's that going to happen?
Give us a package that says John Wall on it. We're talking about a all-star point guard. Tell us a package.
I saw like some like 14 deal, like McLemore going to the Clippers.
Why the hell would the Clippers want Ben McLemore?
Iman, are you laughing over there?
I read that somewhere.
Hey, you know what? I'm bored out of my freaking mind, so I'm going to read stuff that has no chance of happening. That was the name of that headline. Come on, Iman. Let's deal with some reality here, okay? If you're the Washington Wizards, your team's not very good, all right? And it's not. It's not very good. But what you do have, okay, is a very good point guard. He's not my favorite, but I gotta give him credit. He's a good player, okay, and John Wall. Why would you be giving up John Wall unless you get a really good package in return? And if you want him to play with DeMarcus, well, you're obviously not including DeMarcus in that package. So who do you have on Sacramento that Washington would want for John Wall? Nobody.
I mean, I guess Rudy Gay, throw in, maybe Orme Cashby. I don't know.
Iman, they would hang the phone up on you, and then they would make fun of you on the internet. Come on now. Stop it already. 339-1140. 800-920-1140. What are you laughing at?
They make fun of you on the internet.
Well, I mean, come on.
Yeah, they already have a shooter in Bradley Beal. Holy moly.
No, really. I mean, would they not make fun of Iman? They would make fun of him.
Yeah, they'd make fun of Iman.
And again,
block.
Back to DeMarcus. He hasn't even...
Never, ever
he
you've heard
He says he's
that.
Loyal to Sacramento. He wants to stay here. Even with all the losing, the guy has been committed to Sacramento. I don't see him all of a sudden going to Vlade and say, you know what, I want to be traded.
Like no one else we've seen, he is. You've never heard a peep out of DeMarcus with anything except... I love being here, and I enjoy being
Absolutely.
Here. Yes.
So I don't think that's going to happen. But again, I always have to go, well, what if? Well, if it happens, well, then so you try something new. That's all. I mean, it's not – I don't think it's brain surgery here, you know? I really
not.
Don't. All right, let's get to JR. What's up, JR?
Grant and DC, talk to me. Listen, isn't it you've got to have two prolific scorers, right, in the NBA – to be a good team. All good teams have that, right?
Yes.
DeMarcus is carrying the load by himself. The Rudy Gay experiment is over. It's time for Vlade Divac to get off his ass and do something and get us a damn second scorer.
Well, first of all, do you think that Vlade's not trying to get the team better? Do you think that Vlade Divac is not talking to every general manager in the league trying to work out deals? I mean, it's not like he's sitting back in his office going, boy, I really like this team. It's a finished product, and I don't have to make any moves. I mean, let's be serious, okay?
When do the moves come, Grant? I mean,
we're normally right before the trade deadline.
Yeah, and you also you can't panic and do it because it's a game of chess up there in those offices. You know, people are reading, they're seeing what you're doing, putting out little things here and there to say this and that to try to lower your trade value. There's a lot of different things. You can't do it from a panic situation, but I definitely, like Grant said, he's definitely not sitting up there twinkling his toes.
Yeah, I'm not saying we panic, but I mean, if you look at the one guard, the position of one guard, Darren Collins had a good couple games when he first started, but now he's just kind of disintegrating into nothing right now. Ty Lawson, I mean,
all right, so go ahead. I've got the power of the franchise. I've just made you the general manager. Okay, go ahead. Tell me what you're going to do.
Listen, G, I'm not a VP of operations. I don't know, but I'm just saying we need a shooter, man. We need to get somebody that can make a shot.
Yeah, you got a guy coming over next year if you can wait that long. His name's Bojan Bogdanovic. He can make a shot. But listen, I understand your frustration, but it's you make it sound so simple. It's not, all right? It's not as simple. All right, we'll be right back. This is Sports 1140 KHDK. Final segment. We got some phone calls to get to.
It's 6:49, time for a retirement checkup. Call David Hedrick at Granite Bay Asset Management Group, 791-1737.
Let's get to Eric. Hello, Eric.
Hey, Grant. Hey, Doug.
Hey.
Hey, I'm trying to stay warm out here. It's pretty cold. But, I was trying to reply to that last caller. I don't even know if I blame him because this was a thing, we'll call it, that was kind of reported on ESPN, even PCI, about 2 weeks ago when Cousins made an off-the-color caller comments about wanting to play with John Wall. And of course, I mean, players want to play with each other, but it's up to the teams that are, you know, have them under contract partially. And just like the city of Oakland and Raider fans want Oakland to build a stadium for them. They want that. That's what they want. It doesn't mean someone's going to have to pay for it. So just like in the NBA, you have to pay for it on a trade. So, like, Grant, you understand this, obviously, but if the Kings and Vladivostok call Washington and say, hey, we'd like to trade for John Wall, they're going to go, okay, DeMarcus Cousins and who? Who else are you going to
give
them?
Right, exactly. That's exactly right.
Exactly their answer.
Yeah,
exactly.
You're right.
They're not going to hear any other – there's not a single other player that's going to be – unless you include the name DeMarcus Cousins, they would even – like I said, they would hang up the phone and laugh at you. And the way the caller even said it, he said the word, oh, why don't you throw in Omri Cassidy or throw in – no, that's literally the definition of giving him garbage. I'm not saying Cassidy's garbage.
No, but you're not getting John Wall unless DeMarcus Cousins is part of the package.
This is true.
Yeah, and ESPN kind of unknowingly started this, or DeMarcus Cousins, but ESPN really went overboard with saying, this is going to happen. Oh, okay, or not this is going to happen. This is a scenario that could happen. No, DeMarcus Cousins is under contract, and John Wall is under contract for even another year on top of that. He's under contract for 2.5 years. So they will never play together in the next 2.5 years. It won't happen. And even if they do, the salary cap's gone up. We're talking two $25 million guys here. It's going to be tough to salary cap them anywhere, you know, as well.
All right. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it.
Grant.
Gary, you're on with Grant and Doug.
Yeah, hey, Grant. There's conversation about because with DeMarcus Cousins, we're only winning 30, 35 games a year. But honestly, I think it's really an indictment of Kings management. I mean, we've had the guy for quite a few years now, and they really have not put anybody around him. It seems like time and again, the trades and the players that they pick up are basically bench players. They're not even starters. Rudy Gay's about the only guy who's not, and his style doesn't fit his play. So isn't it really an indictment of some really poor management that they haven't been able to put any solid...
Well, the reality is you can't get top free agents to come here. They don't want to come here. The last 2 years, I know for a fact that some of the top choices that Vladdy had circled in free agency said no, they don't want to play here. So what does that mean? So what is... And that's why... Wait, let me just finish real quick, and I'll give you plenty of time to respond. That's why I think that if you can't get free agents to come play for you, and I don't mean you can't get, I mean, you know, listen, Garrett Temple's a very good player, but he's not Kevin Durant. You know what I'm saying? And so, so when I hear those things, I say to myself, okay, if you can't get top of the line free agents to come, how do you get really good players? Well, you have to get lucky and you have to draft them. Okay, are you more inclined to get lucky in a draft when you have a top three pick or when you have an 8, 9, 10, or 11 pick? And if you're going to win 35 games, okay, I'm sorry, you're just not going to get that type of player. Go ahead, give me your thoughts.
Well, I think, you know, that's an interesting – first of all, I agree with you that it's very hard to get a top-line stud player when you're 6, 7, 8 in the draft. It's very difficult. And I think it's interesting – that you were, you know, in the past, I thought that the take of most people was that it really wasn't that free agents didn't want to come to Sacramento, and that if they, with a player like DeMarcus, see we're making progress, and with the Golden 1 center now, that perhaps we could get over that hump. Do you think that we're still not over that hump then?
This could be true now that you have a top-class facility and a lot of different things. This is something that can take shape, but we've yet to see. It's 6:54, time for a retirement checkup. Call David Hedger at Granite Bay Asset Management Group, 791-1737.
All right, that's going to do it. Back tomorrow at 3 for Doug Christie, Grant Napier saying so long, everybody.